out.
It is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal! Down the ice! Scores!
Five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast. I'm your host, Colton Prale. Joining me, as always, Graham Anderson, Nick Segan. Guys, welcome to the show. We have so much to talk about today, and by so much, I mean we planned this about 2 minutes ago. So let's get right into it. Talked a little Atlantic wildcard race last week. You guys doubted the Bruins. Just saying. There was no faith. No faith in the Bees. I'm sitting here looking pretty. Like a freaking genius. How do you feel about that?
Everything we say is recorded and will be remembered forever, won't it?
This is true. It will. I mean, they're only 3 points out of a wild card spot, but in this race, that's like an eternity.
And you're going to keep throwing it in our faces.
At least once, yeah.
At least once. Well, you never know. Like, look how fast it changed from last week to this week. So you don't know what's going to happen where we'll be next week. We'll probably be doing another update on the Atlantic Division.
You guys making fun of me as the Bruins are eliminated? Got him!
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely an interesting race. And I think it's like it's fun for that division like to see how log-jammed it is, especially this late into the season. Like, I mean, when I say late, I know there's still like, you know, 12, 15 games for a lot of teams to play, but, you know, sometimes it would be more like, okay, it's going to be one of these two teams that'll squeak in. One's up, but it's still like there could be four or five teams that could still legit like have a reasonable chance of getting in there. I mean, I think Florida is now kind of out of it.
Yeah.
Which is the case last week. I know at least I was saying Florida was going to be one of the two. So now I'm going to bite my tongue with that. And because that's going to be, you know, they'd have to have a really strong final 12 games to do that.
Yeah.
I'll bite my tongue on that one.
6 points back of the wild card, 9 points back of third in the division. Like they would need to be incredible and have everybody else fail. I was high on Philly. I thought Philly could have maybe made some movements. I liked the way they were playing. I'm glad I didn't bring it up because yikes. Like they're out of it. I think it's fair to say that Philadelphia and Carolina are both done. And most likely Florida.
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia is only a point behind Florida, so, you know.
Yeah. I don't see them making any kind of movements.
Same position.
Which, that's where the Flyers just surprised me. And we were talking about that before we came on the air, how, like, last year, with the playoff run they had in that first round against Washington, how they actually, like, Washington had to earn that first round win. Like, it was not a easy round for them. And, you know, Philly put them on the map. So I expected them to have a much better year than they have. And I think Steve Mason had a hot start, and then he's become the Steve Mason we've all come to get you know. But I don't think the Flyers are far. I think this is just a slight down year for them. I think come next year we'll be having this conversation with the Flyers as one of those teams. Like, yeah, they're in because they got good young players in Gostis, Behare, Provorov, Konechny. Like, they got a great young group there. Giroux, Simmons, we all know what they can do. Like, they got their solid group, so I'll be surprised if we're having the same conversation with them out next year.
Do you not think that they need a goalie, though?
I don't mind Mason.
Steve Mason.
I don't mind him. He has been up and down throughout his career, I will give you that, but for the majority of his tenure with the Flyers, he has been above league average. And if you really need a goalie, you can go out and get Yaro Halak for basically nothing.
But I don't think Halak would be an upgrade from Mason.
I don't either. But I think a Halak Mason 1-2 could be pretty powerful. I don't think they have the cap space for that though.
No.
I'm just looking at their rolling 25 game Corsi 4 average, score zone venue adjusted as always. They basically had opposite ends of the season. So like last year from middle of February, like Valentine's Day to the middle of April, they just cruised upwards, like skyrocketed. They were rolling when it came to possession, all the right way. This season, from the start of December to the start of February, they went from like a barely break even team to like 48% and just went downhill, and they've only just started climbing back up since the beginning of February, and they only peaked, they only like broke even at the start of March. So like this team, even though they were winning, they weren't playing all that well. This isn't the Flyers of last year. They've got the pieces, but I don't know. I don't know if it's systems there, because I don't think the systems are great. I don't think it's, I don't know if it's the defense. They don't have a ton of puck moving defensemen. I like Brandon Manning. I mean, Radko Gudas is perhaps better than I give him credit for. And obviously their young D are fantastic. Gostis, Bear, Provorov, Sanheim when he eventually gets there. I don't know. This team just doesn't do it for me.
Gosh, his Bears regressed a bit this year, hasn't he? Like,
no, he's played fine. The coach just hates him. Like, he keeps getting healthy scratched for no reason.
Yeah. I keep seeing reports that he's been scratched, led me to believe that he is not playing well.
No,
which boggles my mind when you go from a defenseman who was, I'm pretty sure he was a Calder finalist last year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was. So you go from a guy who was a Calder finalist last season, and now he's being healthy scratched. It's almost like they know they can't get to the postseason. They know the 1-2 picks are mostly going Colorado and then Arizona. So it's almost like he's sitting his good young players in a way that I want to suck the last 10-12 games of the season to try to push our chances of getting a top 5 pick better, which I know it sounds stupid because I got a lot of young players in there. I'm just trying to think, why would you scratch him? And that's,
he's been scratched for longer than that, though. Like, this has been happening for like 3 months of just randomness, and I just don't get it.
Maybe that also makes me wonder, does he have like a small injury that they're kind of just giving him like rest days almost, and they're just,
I think Haxtell just doesn't trust him.
Why would you scratch a guy like that?
I just don't think he has trust. The coach doesn't like him, or at least doesn't trust him defensively, which is ridiculous because like he's fine. There's nothing.
So then maybe to, I don't want to say wrap this up, but I don't know how much you guys want to talk about Flyers, but to put it in a new direction, saying, you know, do they need a goalie like Nick said a minute ago with Steve Mason? Maybe he's not the guy. Do they need a coaching change in Philly?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think Haxtell's
the guy. That's what I would say. Like, when you look at the team, it's like, okay, you're clearly building your blue line around a Calder finalist and another rookie in Provorov. Then you got Konechny, who's a rookie. Like, you got a lot of these young players there, and if you're the front office, you're saying, okay, it's obvious we're building our blue line around these two young kids, and if those guys don't do it for you, well, we've invested a heck of a lot of money in them, so we're going to find somebody else who can work with them, because we're not trading Ghost tomorrow, unless Colorado says, hey, you want our number one overall pick for Ghost Dispy here. That would be the only scenario where the Flyers would get rid of the guy.
Even then, I
agree.
Well, probably not even then, but still, he's been fantastic. I mean, I'm looking at Mike McCurdy's Twitter right now. He's got them at a 2% chance to make the playoffs. Like that's, they're just done.
What is the league average save percentage, Colton, for goalies
this year, or just, you know, it's a standard
in
year?
In general, is it like 910, 920?
No, it's around 916.
916?
Yeah, like 915, 916, 914, depending on the year. I think this year it's like 917, if I'm correct. But yeah, if you're 920, you're above average. If you're over like a 922, you're one of the best. So,
gotcha.
I mean, okay. Goaltending is such a small margins business.
At Steve Mason's career stats, and I'm not convinced. Sticking with my instinct. I'm not convinced he's the guy.
He's up and down. One of the best ways to evaluate goalies, I find, is Ian Fleming's website, dispellingvoodoo.com. I had him on actually in our analytics series. He was the first episode, so I'll probably link that in the description of this if you want to go give that a listen too. He's got fantastic metrics for evaluating goaltenders, charts and stuff like that that are really easy to understand. Mason is basically like 3 terrible years to start his career, 3 good years, and then kind of up and down for the last couple of years. So I don't know. I think there is a good goaltender in there. I'm not sure that he's playing like it this season. It's a weird one. It's just a weird one.
It's got to make it tough, though, for your teammates to have confidence, right, for those players.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I mean, like, you look at that Bill Peters when he called out Eddie Lack, and obviously that was the wrong way to do it, and I don't agree with it. But at the same time, like, he's not just calling him out from a coach's point of view. You know, he's got 22 guys that need to rely on their goaltender, and if you don't feel like you can, you know, make a defensive mistake and not get bailed out, that's going to affect your game. You know, regardless of who you are, if you're not comfortable doing a creative play or a low percentage play that could result in a goal, then what's the point of being out there? You know, if you're not willing to take risks, you're not going to succeed. It's a basic, proverb. It's a basic proverb, but it's true. You know, if you're not willing to risk things, you're going to fail. And I don't want to say the Flyers can't do that, because they've clearly got players who are willing to risk a lot. You know, I look at a Provorov, I look at a Konechny, obviously Giroux, Jake. You know, those guys are willing to try those low percentage plays, and most of the time it's not that low percentage for them. But this team is just filled with issues for me going down the lineup. And I think it starts with, you know, they were missing Sean Couturier for so long. He's a big part of that team on the second line. I don't know that Filppula is the guy there. I almost would prefer Filppula on the third line.
I'd agree with you there for like 100%. And I think, again, when it comes to the goalie, right, like, it affects how aggressive you can play and how your defense works. But I think what, you know, and your coach can call it the goalie as much as they want, but I think that's when then you have to have your first line defenseman. And, you know, and maybe not so much Gostisbehere here or anything like doing something like that, because he hasn't been in the league long enough to, you know, throw his weight around and stuff. But if you have a guy, I don't know, like, I'll use a sense, for example, let's say Anderson's playing poorly, but Carlson goes, no, Anderson's our guy. We believe in him. And it's Erik Karlsson, you know, arguably one of the best defensemen, point producing defensemen in the league. If he can then go and back up Anderson, or, you know what, like, if it's a, or Brent Burns backs up his goalies, or, you know, if you're a top defenseman who then says, I know our coach has given the goalie a lot of slack, but I believe in him. Our goalie needs to know that we believe in him. Then at least the goalie knows, okay, my teammates believe in me. My coach is just a prick. And I think that's something that maybe needs to happen for Steve Mason, is that he needs to hear, you know, again, I can't say Gostisbehere or Provorov, because they got a rookie and a guy who they just don't have enough clout or experience or recognition in the league yet to say something like that. So you'd have to go to a guy like your Giroux or Simmons, who aren't defensemen, but at least have an impact in the game, for, mm-hmm. you know, Wayne Simmons to say, yo, he's our guy. We're messing up on our end. Like, we know he's the guy. And then I think that would help your team hearing, like, okay, our, you know, one of our main guys is saying we got to believe in our goalie, and that he does. So let's get on board with that.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, you're looking at a team that is score adjusted, like a 49% Corsi 4 team. You know, they're hovering right below average. They're sitting in a right below average spot in the league. Like, this is the Flyers. I don't think they're underperforming. I don't think they're overperforming. I think last year they performed better than they did this year. And I don't know if that was because of a change in tactics. I don't watch them closely enough to tell you that. But, you know, all the numbers seem to suggest that this team is where they should be based on their performance.
And then,
yeah,
that kind of lead me to a question I'll throw to you guys then, before maybe this is something you guys are wondering, is with the Atlantic wildcard being so logjammed and so tight, and that, and getting those wildcard spots being tough in the Eastern Conference in general, do you guys think that the Flyers or the Hurricanes are the closer team to getting into that wildcard comp, like competing for that wildcard? Do you think next season that's the Flyers that inch closer, or the Hurricanes? Because we're looking at two teams that are pretty close there.
It depends who's backstopping the Hurricanes.
We've beat the Flyers to death for the last 5 minutes. I was curious what your thoughts might be on the Hurricanes. Do we think one of these two teams can push up with the likes of the Bostons and the Torontos and the LA and the Tampas?
Statistically, for the first half of the season, Carolina was like a top 14 team. You know, they played really well, and they had Cam Ward in net, which didn't help. And next season, they're still going to have Cam Ward in net, which won't help. And for that reason, I'm going to go with the Flyers, because one, it's Ward, and two, tactically in this last half of the season, they've been awful. Like, just plain and simple, Carolina has been awful. They've plummeted down to like 28th place or whatever it is they're in now. In that bottom five, and they've just been bad. Like, there's just simply no excuse for the way they've played. You know, yes, they'll have some better young prospects on the team, but so will Philadelphia. You know, they've got good defensive prospects. Provorov will have another year on him. Konechny will have another year. Like, they're still going to be competing in the Metro. I don't know where they'll fit in that scene. I think they'll still be around the same bubble team kind of point. If Carolina addresses the goaltending and Bill Peters continues to do what he's done over the past few years, and, you know, maybe you get a free agent talent in Carolina who can put the puck in the back of the net, maybe you're getting somewhere. But, like, even with above average goaltending, you know, you give Carolina 919, 920 goaltending for a season, I think this team finishes 12th, 13th in the league. So you're not guaranteed a playoff spot at that point. I just don't think their true talent is that high. I think they've got fantastic systems and some good pieces, but they really need an elite talent that they're missing right now. So I'm going Flyers.
I think the Hurricanes are trending in the right direction. I don't think that they're there yet, and I don't think they'll be there next year either. So I'd have to go Flyers too.
Which is sad for Hurricanes fans, because, like, they keep making all the right moves, and it strikes me as a team that is inching their way forward. They are constantly making little moves that I like. They're acquiring players, they are developing players, they are drafting players. They've got, like, what, 7 picks in, like, the top 3 rounds in the 2017 draft, or something insane like that. This is a team that is doing it the right way, in my opinion, but it seems like they're doing it so slowly. And I feel bad for their fans, because you drop a Tyler Seguin onto that team. You know, you drop a Taylor Hall onto that team. Heck, you drop an Anze Kopitar onto that team, and I think you've got a team that is not only competing for a playoff spot that could seriously do damage, assuming you got rid of Cam Ward.
Like, yeah, they definitely need help in net.
Yeah.
But I wonder if, you know, due to them being, you know, kind of trending in that right direction, definitely slowly, but trending nonetheless, I wonder if that makes them more appealing for a free agent.
Or what if you're the Sedins? Like, theoretically, Carolina has the money to get you both. They're an internal cap team, but they've got room.
For sure.
I think they could get a free agent. I think they're a spot that a free agent, a top end free agent, would be willing to go, because, like Nick said, they're trending in the right direction. I just kind of feel like, you know, like Jeff Skinner, great player, and I'm going to say this, and Colin will probably give me another silly look, especially when I said Erik Karlsson is one of the best point producing defensemen. When I added that point,
he is the greatest.
I can't see it, but anyway, again, Jeff Skinner, great player, but I'm just going to compare him to a Sens guy, and I'll compare him to Kyle Turris, in that they're great players, but Kyle Turris isn't the guy in Ottawa. He's not going to be your top end forward. Jeff Skinner can't be the top end forward in Carolina, but he is, because it's Carolina. So if you can find somebody that would then allow Skinner to still go out and get you 55, 60 points, which I think he's got like 44, 45 right now. So I could easily see him get another 10 this season before it's all wrapped up. If you can get somebody else in there with him, then I think you're good. Aho looks to be an amazing prospect who's playing really well. So I think they're definitely trending in the right direction, to echo what Nick has said. And I think free agents may consider that a destination to take their talents to.
The big thing with Skinner is, can he stay healthy? Because if Jeff Skinner can stay healthy, he is an elite goal scorer, in my opinion. If you break 30, or you're around 30, you're a very valuable commodity in the NHL. The issue is that Jeff Skinner plays left wing and not center, and that automatically depreciates his value. Because while scoring wingers are fantastic, you know, having an elite winner, or an elite winger, I should say, like Mark Stone, for example, if we're going back to the Senators, does not automatically make your team an elite team, like Mark Stone with the Senators. And I would draw the same comparisons to Jeff Skinner. You know, this is a guy that when healthy can, I mean, he's 24. You know, when healthy, this guy pots around 30 goals a season, gets you 50-ish points. You know, 60 maybe. You know, that's a first line player and a key part of a cup winning team. But it's like you said, Graham, that's not the part. And Jordan Staal, fantastic center. He's probably your number two though on a cup winning team. You know, and I just think they're that one elite talent away. You know, goaltender and one elite forward talent, and all of a sudden you're looking at a team that is vastly different and can finally draw in some free agent power, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, so when do we get to talk about how badly the Leafs did last night?
Oh my God, I've been waiting to do it all the time. Okay, Nick, do you want to go first? You're in Toronto.
They were awful. And you know what? We were at Real Sports watching the game on the big screen, and everyone in the restaurant was so disappointed. It was wonderful.
You take too much joy in that.
No, you can't top that disappointment this year.
Oh my God. If you are in Toronto and you haven't been to Real Sports and you get a chance to go, one, fantastic bar, so many TVs. But like Nick said, that is the best place to be if you are not a Leafs fan when the Leafs are getting dummied. Because everyone there is such a suck about it, and it's fantastic.
You know what, though? I made an interesting observation because I was there around the same time of year last year because mm-hmm. they were playing the Wings, and we went for our anniversary, and we were the only two people in there with our jerseys on last year. Not a single person. Wow. It was like people just didn't care. This year, jerseys everywhere, all over the bar.
How many of them were Austin Matthews jerseys?
Probably like 80% of them. But it just goes to show how much more interested people are this year and excited in Toronto.
I think it was Travis Yost I was listening to on a recent radio hit that basically said, like, look, the Toronto Maple Leafs are a slightly above average true talent team. We are currently in a year where they have had next to no injuries. No real critical player has gone down. They've stayed healthy. Their goaltending hasn't been great, but hey, that's the guy you signed. It's a crappy division, and they are still a bubble team. Like, yes, you have Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Willie Nylander, Jake Gardner. Awesome. Hold your horses, though. This isn't a cup-winning team. This isn't even a cup-contending team. This is barely a playoff-contending team. And yes, I know in a couple of years that won't be the case. But for right now, face it, Toronto. You're not that good. In fact, you're pretty bad. 6 points.
That was beautiful.
6 points on Carolina. Like, there's your perspective.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Like they'll squeak in. Probably won't do much.
No.
But they have such a big fan base. And I almost like, I find Toronto sports in general is just interesting because clearly, you know, hockey is Canada's game for all the American people listening. I don't want to get into that. But it's such a huge thing, right? Like the Leafs are huge in Toronto. Like you'll know as any young player, and I think that's what's helped with all these young players, is you've gone into arguably the biggest hockey market out there as a group. Like Austin Matthews isn't doing this on his own. He's got Nylander, he's got Marner, he's got other rookies that are on that team. I know not big names like that, but I think like two-thirds of their roster are rookies. I exaggerate for effect, but not by much. So I think that's helped for all of those guys, is they've done it as a group in the biggest hockey market. It's not, hi, I'm Austin Matthews, everybody look at me, and there's nobody else. There's other guys, so that helps. But the other thing that I think is interesting, and I draw this comparison because I think it's helped the Leafs and why maybe Leafs fans are so much more engaged, is because if we flip sports for a second, look at the Raptors. I'm not going to, this is a hockey podcast, so I won't talk about basketball for long. But for the last 2 years, they've been awesome. Like they went to the Eastern Conference Final with the Cavs last year. Really, really good. The Raptors have been playing crap lately. The Leafs are looking to get into the playoffs. So if you're in Toronto and you like both, you're probably like, I got to get on this Leafs bandwagon for this last 3 weeks of the season and then pray that the Raptors hold on to a top four spot because they're shit right now. And then, so I think that might help a little. That's maybe why you're seeing a little more fandom with people wearing their Leafs jerseys, because the other big sports team that plays at this time of the year isn't playing very well right now. So that helps.
Yeah. Here's the other thing I think about the Leafs is they know they're not a cup contending team.
Like, yeah.
They're very self-aware. I think even at this point last year, they weren't even planning to be contending for the playoffs, but you know, Austin Matthews happens and the rebuild sped up a bit. But I think at this point it's like, let's get into the playoffs and let's get these kids some postseason experience. They probably don't expect to make it past Pittsburgh and Washington, but that experience is invaluable for these kids and it'll help them next year and it'll help speed up this rebuild.
What I'm really hoping for, and it's because it's a move I didn't really get at the time, is that Tampa makes the playoffs and takes that final wild card spot from Toronto. Because if the Lightning make the playoffs, that means that Brian Boyle's ex-team that now has a free second round pick for not having Brian Boyle just took the Leafs out of the postseason after they acquired Brian Boyle, which, like, I don't want to go back to the trade deadline, but can we just agree that was a dumb move? Like, what does he bring?
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
it was a head scratcher for me
too. I didn't get it. It didn't seem to fit in with the pattern of
that was a Lou move. It was 100% a Lamorello move.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very strange.
It was weird. I don't get it, but whatever it happened, what are you going to do about it? I hope Toronto misses the playoffs. I think that's basically where we're at.
You're ruthless.
Speaking of Boyle and the trade deadline, did you hear his quote the other day?
About yes. Oh my gosh.
About something like, they didn't want me, they traded me, so what do I care going back to play in their building? We're going to win.
Yeah, he's like, I got a lot of fond memories of Tampa Bay, but at the end of the day, they traded me. Guess they didn't need me.
Yeah.
Like,
what a weird thing to
oh
say.
Oh my god, and bitter.
I always find it interesting when teams will trade a player, but they retain 50% of his contract. And like, whenever I see a trade like that, I go back to, again, switching sports for a second, I go back to that Moneyball scene.
Yeah.
When they're talking to where he's talking to the player, like, they're paying you $4 million to not play on their team. And if I'm a player and it's like, so you've traded me, but you're retaining part of my contract, so you're paying me to not play for you? You're saying it's better for you to spend money for me to not be on your roster? Then, like, if I take that as a player, I'm like, I'm destroying you. Like, when I come back to Tampa, I don't care if I get a 10-minute game of misconduct. I am beating the shit out of somebody.
Hey, Phil Kessel won a Stanley Cup.
I think that's how you're supposed to do it.
Right.
But sure, you know, two for interference and instigating and 10 for a game and a couple game suspension afterwards, you know, that's also an option. You know,
yeah,
you do you, Brian.
Especially if, I also find it interesting too when you look at trades that happen and players who then are healthy scratched. It's like, why did you acquire this guy at all then? If you're just going to bench him half the time.
One more team in the Atlantic I want to ask you guys about. How do you feel about the Lightning? Or not the Lightning, excuse me, the Islanders.
I don't feel very good about the Islanders. After the beating they took last week from Carolina.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's not a good game to play this late in the season when the playoffs are on the line.
Josh Hosang has been fantastic. That's about
it. Let me put it this way. I'll make it simple. The Isles give me no smiles.
They were trending up since like November and have been slowly getting better. And then they peaked middle of February, and it's just been like a rocky downhill since then. And I don't know what to say. I mean, like, the coaching change helped. It's a lot more faith in Doug Weight than I thought was given. But, you know, whatever. It worked. It wasn't misplaced, apparently. I don't know that they're necessarily the scariest team. I don't think they're going to hold on to that spot. But I do think it's interesting that they've kind of, come back from having seemingly no hope to a little bit of hope. I think end of the day, it's going to be Montreal, Ottawa, Boston, and then Tampa with that final wild card, and New York with the first wild card.
Here's the other thought I have with the Islanders. If I'm if I'm making a first round matchup and it's Washington versus Toronto or Washington versus New York, I think Toronto would be a tougher opponent than the Islanders.
I agree with that. 100% I agree with that.
And I feel for the Islanders too. I mean, you know, they had a good year last year. I say I feel for the Islanders. I feel even more for Tavares. And I know I brought it up last week and Dan Colton was like, no, Tavares is an elite player, Graham. You're a knucklehead. Which I acknowledge, yes, he is an elite player. He's top 20 in the league. That's how good he is. But he doesn't have a lot of help. Josh Hosang, great, but you can't predict how good a guy's gonna be after six games. Like, you know, I mean, if
he's not playing with him though.
I think he's got 6 points in 9 games.
Yeah,
so
something like that.
Based off of that, it's like, oh, we got another 70-point player in Josh Hosang. If he plays like his number predecessor says, then sure, maybe we do have a 70-point player in Josh Hosang, but we're not going to get into that. And I don't think Hosang is the piece that Tavares needs next to him. They have talented guys. It's just I think they're going to, again, limp in, and whoever their first-round opponent is probably going to showcase them for who they really are.
I mean, John Tavares is playing with Anders Lee and Josh Bailey, and that's the top line. I think that tells you enough about that team. That just can't
Anders
be your
Lee
top three.
Top line guy. Anders Lee isn't a top. Anders Lee is barely a top nine guy. I would say maybe top six. Maybe top six. No, how should I?
He's definitely middle six. Top line's very pushy.
Yeah. But Josh Bailey, I think Bailey's fine. You know, him and Tavares, if you can find somebody else to get on that line with them, you could have a very good first line.
Andrew Ladd's on the second line. Hey, that's an improvement from fourth line Andrew Ladd. No laughing over there, Nicholas.
For how many more years?
Yeah, right. Like, oh my God. Worst
Andrew
deal
Ladd ever.
Andrew
Ladd on the second line? That makes me mad.
Worst deal the rhyming thing again. Ever.
I know Nick appreciated the last one with the Isles.
All right, one team we haven't talked a ton about, excuse me, I can barely get my words out, Calgary Flames, 10-0-0 their last 10 games, beat Pittsburgh 4-3 last night.
We haven't talked about them, but everyone else has been.
Streaking.
The Flames, for one last bad pun, the Flames are on fire.
They are indeed. I'm not that scared of them, though.
Promise no more.
They've been playing fantastic hockey. I will give them that. They've been on fire to use Graham's term since the middle of January. You know, they've played very, very, very well. You know, there's nothing about this recent stretch of hockey that says, yeah, Calgary's just lucking in. Like, this is a team that is hot at the right time. That's all the playoff success. Do you believe that? Are you confident in this team, or are you looking at that and going, eh, you're matching up against Anaheim? That's maybe not the matchup you want in the postseason.
I don't know if I'm matching up. I don't have a lot of faith in Anaheim.
The other option is Edmonton, who is only 1 point back.
Which that would just the storylines if Edmonton and Calgary played in the first round. The storylines write themselves. Like, that would be dream matchup for any hockey fans out there. Like, that,
oh my gosh,
I'd watch the hell out of that game.
Oh, 100%. Me too. Anaheim doesn't scare me, though. If Calgary drew Anaheim in the first round, I think they'd beat them in five. Like, honestly, Anaheim doesn't scare me.
What if it's Edmonton?
I think Edmonton, I could, if it's Calgary, Edmonton, I could see it being a 7-game series and being tight. Like, the whole, like, I could see it being a very, very tight series. But I think Calgary's win streak has come at a more critical time in the season. I mean, you know, Columbus had a 14 game win streak, but that was
16,
so long,
wasn't
ago,
it?
Or whatever it was, something ridiculous. 14 plus. But it was so long ago now that they're like, you know, the only reason they're still, I think, they still have a top three part, the number three seed in their division is because of that. That's the only reason they're still there, is because they had that kind of a win streak. But Calgary's win streak, I think, is coming at a more important, more critical time because the playoffs are in less than a month and now you're playing like this. Now, they've got this 10-game win streak. If then they go and have a 5-6-game losing streak, what we're talking about becomes a moot point. Like, they're not going to win the last 12, 14 games of the season. They're not going to go 22-0 to finish a year. That's not going to happen. So they're going to lose. But when they lose, it's, do they lose 6-1? Or do they lose 4-3 in overtime? Or when they do lose, the next game they have, do they bounce back? Or is it like, okay, now they've lost three in a row, so that 10-game win streak really doesn't matter much anymore?
They're lucky the Kings were so terrible this year, because like they're not at all competitive with the Sharks, who have a 9-point lead on them. And there is 1 point separating second, third, and fourth in the Pacific. Like, that is insane. And then another 9 points down to LA. You know? Like, that is wild to me.
While you guys were chatting, I just loaded up some Corsica stats. Since they started their 10-game streak, so this is like mid-February about, they're only kind of middle in the pack on Corsi 4, but their PDO is like 108.
Oh my god, yeah. It's like through the roof. So I'm looking at their 5-game average. They peaked this season at 56.79 on a 5-game average, which is fantastic. But it's been like 54, 53.9, 52, 55. Like, it's not bad. They're holding good averages for about a month. Like, 54 is, you know, since the start of February, 54-ish percent score-adjusted Corsi 4. Like, that's a very, very strong team. Like, that's Chicago Blackhawks cup-winning team from a couple years back. So, it's possible. I just, like, it's the Flames, man.
Yeah, they're shooting at, like, almost 12%. I don't know. I think they have some luck right now, and it will not carry over to the playoffs.
I love their top six. It's the bottom six that I don't like.
I just have no faith. Like, with your top end teams, you look at, and I think, like, I try to look at it in a way is, where would this guy play on any other team? Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're a second line player in Calgary, would you be a second line player in Chicago, in Washington? Or if you were on one of those teams, would you be a fourth line player? But if you would still be, and maybe even say, you know, maybe you're a first line player in Calgary, but you'd be a second line player in Chicago, wherever. Like, if it's that kind of, that's fine. That's a little blip. But if you would drop down to like being, you know, first or second line player on your team to a top end team, you'd be lucky to not be a healthy scratch most nights. Then I think you're fine. And I think that's where Calgary's at, is they have a solid top six. It's their bottom six that is going to get exploited, going to get shown. And that's going to be where their weakness falls and where they could have some problems in the playoffs, assuming they still get there and they don't go and have a horrible losing streak after when this win streak inevitably ends.
No, there's no way that they miss the playoffs. LA is just too far back.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're now Canada's best chance of winning a cup this year. I'd still say that probably goes to Montreal.
Yeah, so it has to.
I wouldn't say it's Ottawa or Edmonton or even Toronto if they get in. You know, I still think Montreal.
Why don't you believe in the Senators?
Sorry. Well, I just like ripping on you. You can completely prove me wrong with if they make the Cup Finals, then I will take all the backlash.
Oh my god! If they make the Cup Finals, I want you guys both to know I will be unbearable. Like, you won't want to record these with me.
If they make the Cup Finals, Colton's gonna be like hammered every show. he'll be hammered. He'll be naked, body paint red. It'll be ridiculous.
Every podcast just starts with me screaming into the microphone, like, let's go! Yeah.
But I still think Montreal's Canada's best chance at getting the cup. But yeah. I think Calgary is, you know,
I'd go second
it's
best.
Working on that bottom six, which is tricky, right? Like, I mean, most teams are like, okay, we got to work on our top six. They don't. They got a good top six. Like, we need to find a third line guy who is a bit of an upgrade.
And here's the thing, Christopher Stieg, Sam Bennett, Troy Brouwer are a decent enough third line and a very solid fourth line. The issue is they have Lance Boma and Alex Chiasson on the wings for their fourth line, which basically makes it ineffective. Like, you're just not going to get a goal from Alex Chiasson ever. It just won't happen. He's bad. He's really, really bad. Lance Boma's not that better. And Matt Stajan at this point is basically Casper on skates. So
I didn't even know he was still playing.
Like,
well, why don't they slide Curtis Lazar in there somewhere?
Oh, you're serious. He's probably not an upgrade on any of those guys, to be honest.
Really? I don't know how Curtis Lazar
Curtis Lazar was drafted 15th overall, I believe. And that is the final positive note in Curtis Lazar's development. It starts and ends on draft day. The greatest thing Curtis Lazar did as an Ottawa Senator was eat a hamburger off the ice. Like, that was his crowning moment. He never achieved anything else. So, yeah. Probably not the dude. He has like 2 points all season, literally. So, Chiasson and Boma. And honestly, one of us is probably a better option.
I mean, I'm ready.
Like, if you can fire an outlet pass from, like, the blue line and just you're constantly the zone exit guy, you will pick up more secondary assists than Curtis Lazar has points over the course of, like, 10 games.
But then, on the flip side, like, obviously your top six guys are going to get the most ice time. Do you just highly restrict the minutes that your fourth line gets if you're Calgary and just be like, okay, it's win or go home right now. So our top six guys, they're playing 30. I mean, I say 30 minutes, and I know it's ridiculously high, but they're playing ridiculous minutes. Boma and Chiasson, you're lucky to get 10 minutes a night on the ice because our top six are grinding them, drilling them hard. They are going to be exhausted, but if we don't, we'll get swept.
I think
do you do that if you're Calgary? Or?
Yeah, I think you do in the later rounds. The issue is that it's the playoffs and everyone's going to be banged up and nursing injuries. So I think there's only a certain extent that you can really do that to before you're hampering performance or, you know, expediting the injury or the severity.
I mean, you don't want to affect your top six for the 2017-2018 season, obviously, but
They're going to rely heavily on those players, but you know, at the end of the day, if you're facing a team like the Sharks, you know, you both have good top six then, and then it does come down to who's got the better depth. And while this lineup, you know, on paper, and especially I think next season has the ability to, if they continue to play at this kind of territorial rate, you know, where they're controlling shot attempts to this extent, if they continued to play like that, I think the Flames would be a fantastic team. You know, the question is, can they continue to do that in the postseason and over the course of 82 games? And that's up for debate. And I've yet to see evidence that that is something they can do. One last question for you guys. I promised you each we'd talk about some of the basement dwellers in the league, teams that are out of it, that really are kind of hopeless, and just get your thoughts on those. So we got in the bottom five right now, Vancouver, Dallas, Detroit, New Jersey, Arizona, and Colorado. I think it's fair to say Colorado, maybe the worst team in the salary cap era. Like, there's being this bad when you're tanking, and then there's just being this bad and having 41 points through 68 games. And there's just no words for that. They have almost triple digits, or almost negative triple digit goal differential. Like, that's OUA stuff. Like, this is just awful.
They're horrible. Well, wrap it up. Really simple question for yes or no, both of you. Then we'll wrap Colorado up before we both want to, you know, rip our hearts out. Do they crack 50 points? Yes or no?
That's 4 wins. No, it's 5 wins in another 12 games or so. No, they're not a 500 team. Nick's microphone is muted. He's currently trying to talk to us.
he put his mic on mute. He's like, oh, Avalanche talk, I'm out.
Look, you don't want to hear what I have to say. No, I don't think they crack 50 points.
You really contributed to that. I'm glad you unmuted yourself for those 3 words.
Yeah, you're missing some gold material there.
All right. Team that surprises you most that's in the bottom five? It's got to be Dallas, right?
Yeah, Dallas, for sure.
I mean, I didn't think they were going to be good, but wow.
I did.
Like, I didn't think Demers and Goligoski were going to have this much of an effect. The other team that surprises me is Vancouver. Honestly, I thought they'd be worse. I know they're only 3 points out of third last, but I expected them to be a bottom 3 team. And really, Colorado has screwed this up. Like, 41 points just messes with that. But I really thought Vancouver would be a bottom three team this year.
Well, Vancouver went on a bit of a run there in the new year.
Yeah.
Which helped, but I think they're regressing back to where they should be.
They're pretty abysmal.
I'll agree with Dallas. I thought that'd be better. I'm not surprised with Vancouver. I thought they'd be worse. I think Vancouver has a problem with clinging on to the Sedins. Not saying the Sedins are still great players. Don't get me wrong, but they're not the two you build around. You need other guys. You're building your team to take you to the end of this decade. If you're thinking, oh, we'll keep building around the Sedins, it's not going to work. It's not, because they're going to retire sooner rather than later, and now you have nobody because you've built your team around them. 10 years ago, perfect game plan. Of course, you're still going to build around those guys. Not anymore. And I think that's the problem Vancouver has, is their loyalty to the Sedins. And not saying that loyalty to great players is a bad thing. It's not going to help you get out of the basement anytime soon when you do that. I'm a little hurt that you guys didn't include the Devils in here. I know 2 months ago I'm all saying they're going to make the playoffs. You're all like, hey, Graham, look where they're at. And so I am swallowing my pride with that. But I thought they'd be better. Obviously, 2 months ago was saying they'd be in the playoffs, and you're thinking I'm nuts, and now it's proof in the pudding I am crazy, thinking that was going to be the case. But I thought they'd be better. I like what they have in New Jersey. I like what Palmieri, Henry, Camilleri, I like what those guys bring. Paul, of course. To go back to what we said earlier, looking at Carolina, if you plugged, and Colton, you used Taylor Hall as an example in there, they become a great team. Well, it hasn't really worked for New Jersey, and I thought it would have. I don't think not having Larson is he's not done much for Edmonton, from what I know. If I'm using the right name, I'm pretty sure that's the defenseman New Jersey gave up. Don't think he's done much in Edmonton, so they clearly won out on that trade. But maybe that's all it is in New Jersey, is their defense just needs a little help. I think their forward core is fine with the guys I just mentioned. And they just need some up on the blue line. Then maybe they're okay. I don't know.
I mean, they basically, in my opinion, need an entirely new blue line. Like Andy Green and Ben Lovejoy can't be your top pairing, just ever. They probably can't even be your second pairing.
Yeah, they're fine veteran guys to have, as your fifth and sixth guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could pair Andy Green with somebody else and have an okay second line. Same with Ben Lovejoy, but as a combined top pairing,
it's ugly.
Hell no.
I'm not even that high on Jersey's top six either. But yeah, for me, this is just a team that just has not drafted well or done much of anything. Like, there's really not a lot of upsides. One last thing before we end this episode, though, Nick, I don't know if you're watching the Red Wings game, but Andreas Anastasiou is a fantastic hockey player.
I am watching it. He's so fast.
Oh my gosh. Just cut through the middle of Colorado. What was the defense doing on this play? There's two defenders in the middle of the blue line, and Anastasiou just goes between them both and then gets in all alone. And that was the end of it. Tootin is old and slow, and he skates his heart out, and Anastasiou coasts for about blue line on. Like, offensive blue line on. He takes one stride, and Tootin still can't catch up. Oh my god, I love Anastasiou so much.
The Avalanche suck. They want him to score. They're like, we're going for that. We're going for that three-digit negative goal differential. Let the guy score.
Yeah. I'm watching, and they are painfully bad. But the thing about Anastasiou is, I don't know how... Like, he's not considered a rookie this year because he played enough last year. So I don't know how teams are not catching on to this yet, but he's beat Pittsburgh's defense, he's beat Dallas, he's beat, beat these guys tonight. I'm pretty sure he beat Chicago last week.
I'm laughing because we just referred to Colorado as these guys, and I think that's just, I love that.
Yeah, they're awful.
They're terrible. I don't know if there's much you can do against Anastasiou. Like you basically need Carlson speed with perfect gap control and good positioning and great awareness to see that pass is coming and just like turn and sprint backwards, because he'll blow by you. Like, he will turnstile you right away.
Yeah. He's pretty fast. If only Riley Sheahan had his speed.
Riley Sheahan, record for most shots without a goal.
Yeah.
He's a beauty.
Poor guy. I'm hoping they've got Colorado, Arizona, Colorado this week. Like, come on, Riley. If it's going to happen, it's one of these games.
He has a gorilla on his back. It is not a monkey. God. It's like a full-fledged 800-pound behemoth. I feel bad for him.
Back when I was writing for Last Word on Hockey, I did a piece on him, and I was watching interview footage. I think it's actually in that article if it's still up. But his mannerisms and just like general attitude is so heavy and low. Like, he's so down on himself.
Oh, sports psychology, man. Like, honestly,
yeah.
Someone needs to be taking him to a sports psychologist to make this man feel better. If you haven't listened to our analytics series, listen to the one with CKM Sports. He is a player agent, Cliff Mander, and he talks exactly about this, and it is a fantastic listen. Highly recommend it. That's going to do it for this episode, though. If you like what you heard, you can find us online on Last Word on Hockey. You can subscribe on iTunes or SoundCloud. Just search Game Time Decision Podcast. On Twitter, we are GTD_podcast. You can find myself at Colton Prale, Graham at GHAM614, and Nick at NickSega19. That about does it. Hope you enjoyed. We're going to have more analytics episodes coming up next week. This will drop on Thursday, so a little late. I apologize for that. And no episodes this week. Our recordings failed. But we got some big guests coming up later on. Dom Lechijin, Andrew Berkshire, Jack Hahn, all on the tube. So that'll do well. So be on the lookout for those.
Nick Segan, Graham Anderson.
Yep.
Big
yep.
Coming. Big
those
guess.
Two every week, typically on Mondays or Tuesdays, assuming we don't push it later. But usually one or two good takes, mostly hot takes and just bants. this isn't too serious here. So hope you enjoyed. We'll see you next week.